Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week, they are regulars. Austin Karp is the managing editor / digital Sports Business Journal. Chad Finn is the fine sports media writer for the Boston Globe. No big introductions. We'll just get right into it. Welcome, Chad. Welcome, Austin.
Thanks, Rich.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, awesome. We're going to go. Oh, awesome, of course. Front and center, Karp. That's what I call you on this podcast. We're going to start with you, Austin, and then Chad, please respond after Austin gives us some stats. All right, so I'm stealing absolutely from you, Austin. The NBA's first round playoff viewership, 3.4 million across ABC, ESPN, ESPN2, TNT, and NBA TV. That's up 15% from the previous year. So 3.4 million viewers for the first round of the NBA, up from 3 million the year before, up from 2.7 million in 2021. The coup de grace. First round closes out last Sunday. Warriors Kings, 9.8 million viewers on ABC. From your perspective, what does all this mean?
I think it's huge. I think it's I think the NBA is going to be happy with the narrative for sure, because they were coming off a regular season where they were down a little bit, and everyone's like, oh, nobody watches anything but the Lakers and the Warriors. Well, in the playoffs, that really helps, and that's what happened here. When you have the Lakers going six, when you have the Warriors going seven, that paid off in a big way for the best first-round audience for the NBA since 2014. And that number for that final Kings-Warriors game, I mean, that's a top 50 television audience on all of TV this year to date. And that's how big that is. And it's a first-round game. This isn't an NBA Finals game. It's not Game 7 of the Conference Finals. This was a first-round series with not a big market on the other side in Sacramento. So in the playoffs, Steph, LeBron continue to be big for the NBA. And this series, you saw game one coming off on TNT, the best second round game one ever on cable. If this thing goes six or seven, man, TNT or ABC or ESPN are going to benefit in a big way.
So Austin, So Chad, my take on this, at least sort of like top line, is twofold. One, as Austin said, the NBA has got to be like beyond overjoyed at this. These are monster numbers after what was generally speaking a flat year. So the interest is there when it comes to certain teams. The second thing is, if you look at these playoffs, Warriors and Lakers, it shows you just how important, like, or how mega stardom still people like LeBron James and Steph Curry have. On the opposite side, you have a New York market now with the Knicks. Knicks Heat is a pretty good rivalry, I think, that people maybe reminisce about in the 90s. In your neck of the woods, Celtics Sixers, two massive East Coast television cities with stars like Embiid, the MVP, and Jason Tatum. So I think at least one of my top line things is that if the stars of the NBA still sell nationally. Like, I think what this postseason is making clear is that is still the case.
Oh, hell yeah. Can you imagine the response in the NBA offices no cameras and microphones around when they realized that they were getting Steph LeBron in round two in the LA market and the Warriors team that is national and has been for nearly a decade now in terms of their appeal. You couldn't have lined up the second round of the playoffs better from an NBA standpoint here, just in terms of the teams that are playing in the matchups. You mentioned Heat, Knicks. I mean, the nostalgia for that was instant after those two teams. The two teams advanced the second round and we realized they were going to be playing each other. Celtics fans, historically, I mean, the Lakers are their rival when it comes to finals, but the Sixers, they have even more history with them. That's a really contentious rivalry with a lot of really memorable things going back to the 60s. The NBA has to be thrilled, even in the Western. I mean, you look at the Western Conference's other matchup. You have Durant and Booker on one team, and you have probably the best team in the West that nobody pays attention to in Denver, with a guy who could have been the league MVP for three straight years. And they are the fourth most interesting team in the Western Conference right now. So it's just all lined up beautifully for the NBA and the coinciding ratings that we saw for the first round and that we're going to see for the second round are no surprise.
You know, it's interesting, Austin, and I think, you know, you'd obviously have as good a perspective on this as anything, is you're going to get one of the power viewership teams going through with either the Lakers or Warriors, depending on who wins that series. In the East, you're getting either the Sixers or the Celtics in the conference final. Those are massive viewership teams. And if you get the Knicks, I think that's a big-time viewership team. The Heat are a little, you know, Miami, I think, you would agree, is sort of a weird team when it comes to television viewership. But here's the thing. If you sort of look forward, and the NBA is obviously never going to say this, the one team that I don't have a great feel for, and quite frankly, my feel would be that the finals would not necessarily pop because if this team's in it, is Denver. So I think, like, if you are looking at a dream matchup right now, if you're the NBA, I think you obviously want Lakers/Warriors against either the Sixers/Celtics. Maybe somebody might say New York, and I might be able to buy that just given Knicks being in the finals first time in forever years, but that's how I see it. I think the one team, and no offense to them as a basketball team, they're phenomenal. Denver just doesn't feel like a national team to me, but Austin, you can convince me I'm wrong on that.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that would be a blow to the ratings, Denver versus anybody. That's just the way it is. It's, you know, Jokic, for all his greatness and for all Jamal Murray's greatness and for how deep that team is there. I'm a basketball fan. I love watching Denver play, but it's just not going to pop nationally. They don't have that superstar that drives the numbers like Steph or LeBron. I think ideally, if you're sitting in New York, I think you want to see Knicks versus Lakers or Knicks versus, you know, the Warriors, excuse me. Last year, I don't, like, we've talked about this, Celtics Warriors didn't pop the way I thought it would. So I think that they would like to see, you know, a return of the Knicks to the finals for the first time since the 90s against one of those, you know, superstar led teams, I think would do well in the numbers.
Chad, how are the Celtics doing locally?
Very well. I mean, it's been kind of interesting because their play-by-play voice in the first round couldn't travel because he had retina injury, so he couldn't fly. So they used two analysts during the broadcast, which ratings wise led to being very close in the market between locally and TNT. It was they were both right in that 5-6 range in terms of share. Whereas normally, I think if people were happy with the broadcast, the local broadcast would have done a lot better than the national one. That's the way it seems to trend here anyway. But I don't know. I think I'm trying to think of what the most appealing matchup for the NBA is. And Rich, I'm sure you've heard this and probably have even said it, but a lot of people seem to think that the NBA is better when the Knicks are interesting. So that might be part of it. I think Lakers-Celtics, from my regional standpoint, would be fascinating. And you know, we had that in 2008 and 2010, and both were pretty compelling series.
2018, too, right? Wasn't that Lakers-Celtics?
2018, right, did we? 2018? Oh, no, Celtics haven't been back. No.
Oh, who am I thinking of?
But there's also not Kobe this time. And, you know, Kobe was such a big draw. I am not, you know, obviously Lakers versus Celtics is one of the biggest draws you can ask for in the NBA. I just don't think that, I mean, there is LeBron this time. I just don't know it would draw that level of interest that during the Kobe years.
Yeah, wow, I was way off. Sorry, that was Warriors Cavs 4-0. I don't know what I was. Maybe I was. I think
Celtics are always on the on the
2010. You're right, Chad. 2010 is Lakers Celtics. That's that went seven. So obviously the ratings were through the roof. But I don't who just said this, Austin. Like with Kobe, it's very different without Kobe. It's just
Well, there's LeBron fatigue too. LeBron. I mean, he's there every year.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Like I think I think as a television draw. I mean, I mean, LeBron's obviously been a massive television. I mean, Kobe Bryant was a massive television draw. So yeah, you know, I think the NBA has some good hands here, some really, really good hands. The only
do they want Knicks Lakers?
I think they would love it. Honestly, the only bad hand, in my opinion, the only bad hand viewership wise they really would get would be Nuggets Heat. That's you don't want that. That's
not a win.
That's just a that's no just offense not a, to not a win. You know. God bless you if you're listening from Miami and Denver, and trust me when I say I appreciate it. But that's just not going to pop nationally. It's just not. And now, the little caveat on all this stuff is if it goes seven, you're going to get a big viewership because it's game seven. Game sevens in every sport will pop. But I think if you're the NBA, you got some really potentially great combinations depending on who comes in. I really like Philly as a viewership town. We'll see if my instincts are right on that if the Sixers get through.
What are they, the fourth market? Are they the fourth biggest?
Yeah, they're just like, the fans are just insanely passionate. You know, it's like Buffalo where they over-index, except it's over-indexing in a massive city. So
right.
So we'll see. All right, let's
got to grease those light poles there.
Yeah, let's turn to hockey. Austin, I'll go back to you. Very good. This, again, great stories for the NBA and the NHL. NHL's average viewer, this is again, right from Austin Karp. NHL's average viewership during the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, 914,000 viewers across ABC, ESPN, ESPN2, TNT, and TBS. Second best viewership number on record for the NHL, up 19% from last year. I will ask you the same question, Austin. What do you extrapolate from that?
You know, a lot of people like to give credit for saying, like, oh, there were a couple of games on ABC this year during the first round. Last year, which was the first year of this new media rights pact, no first-round games were on broadcast TV. But even if you take out those two ABC games, they were up big, up double digits. So you got to give the NHL a lot of credit here. People were tuning in. You had some good matchups. You had some big markets. You had the two New York teams, New York market teams going at it. So that helped out. I didn't see this coming. I didn't see a huge increase like this coming. And I think it's a win for the NHL. It's a win for Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery, year two of this deal, showing this sort of game, showing increases among young demos. You had huge increases, you know, among kids. You had huge increases among females. So I think it's just all around just a solid win for the NHL in the first round.
Chad, do you have any thoughts? I mean, the reality is, like, this is a, generally speaking, a regional sport. But that's a really good number. I mean, almost a million per game. I would think that some of this, at least from my perspective, is Bruins going seven. So you had a massive, like, number for that game seven against Florida. You did have the Rangers, as Austin said, and I think that's going to bring a little bit of a pop in terms of viewership. But it's a good number. I you know, my take on it is that I think they have a pretty good product, and I think they got, at least as a viewership play, lucky in that the historic team, the Boston Bruins, played a game seven, which I think probably drew some viewership from outside of Boston and Florida just because people were curious if this team was going to win or lose.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we're concerned here, hockey season's over, but the league would obviously like to see Boston still going, being a rating straw rather than Florida. And if you look at who's left, I'm curious to see how things trend from here on out, because if you're just talking most appealing Stanley Cup final matchup without viewership and ratings involved, it's probably Edmonton against Toronto, just for the story that Toronto would be even getting there. I mean, hell, winning a first round this year was progress. You'd have great history and the best player in the game in McDavid there, but two Canada teams. I don't know what the I don't know what the best case scenario is for the NHL going forward here. Is it in New Jersey? I don't know. Yeah, the Kraken making a run. What is it? Las Vegas.
That's why I want to get with Austin. So Austin, as our viewership person here, I look around. I don't think the NHL has a great hand here. Heading forward, I think
not particularly.
Chad is absolutely right in terms of like the Maple Leafs Oilers would be an incredible series in terms of star power and great hockey, but.
For hockey fans, not for television.
It's a disaster
in Manitoba. It'd be fantastic.
Right, it's a disaster in the U.S. because they're not getting you can't lose two cities in viewership and expect something. So, Austin, when you look around, like you got a thought on this? This is just a pure guess on my part. I think you'd want Seattle if you're the NHL just for that market, but like I can't necessarily connect a team against Seattle in the East that's going to be a big viewership play.
I think Vegas. Would be my number one from the West right now. But I mean, the like you said, they're staring down the barrel of some not.
What do you do? Who are you rooting for in the East if you're the NHL on a viewership play?
Oh, man.
There's nobody. No offense to the Devils.
Honestly,
the Devils are not.
I think you want
the Devils aren't the Rangers.
You want Toronto.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to have a Canadian market, if you're going to have two Canadian markets, now is the year because you know everyone needs to remember the NHL Stanley Cup Final is going to cable TV.
That's
this year.
Great point.
Okay, so you were already potentially eyeing a record low at Stanley Cup final. So if you're going to have Oilers Maple Leafs, let's just get it all out at once.
Well, how soon are we going to be hearing from Warner Bros. Discovery PR people on this one? Now, listen, like you're going to, you know, no offense to those guys. Shout out David Zaslav, but you're not going to get the same viewership that you're going to get on like an over-the-air ABC. And then
they're just numbers.
And it's compounded this year because I don't think you have a big viewership team on either side. So I think the reality is, and again, let's wait and see. We got a long way to go, but we could be looking, Austin, at some very low numbers on the Stanley Cup final this year.
Yeah. And I consider myself the most casual of hockey fans. And yeah, I would tune in to watch Oilers Maple Leafs, knowing that there's just incredible talent on both sides there. But even if that would need to go seven to probably avoid some sort of record low up against probably a sweep that aired on a combination of NBC and NBCSN or Versus back in the day.
Yeah. It's interesting because conversely, where I live, that series would do 8, 9, 10 million in Canada. I mean, it would get,
and that's what the league would play up.
Yeah, it would get
some sort of record number north of the border.
Oh, yeah,
and that, you know, it's a PR game, and that's what it is. Like, if you can say, like, yeah, well, we did draw a record number in Canada, where they have a separate media rights deal. Yeah, that's something to talk about.
They would get the country is a little under 38 million. If a game seven happened. I think we'd be getting close to 20. I mean, this would be like a Super Bowl, but in terms of for the American rights holders, which the NHL caters to certainly more than Rogers up here, that's not a series they want. I mean, that's just the reality of it. If you're Turner, I think that's a tough one unless it goes seven and maybe, you know, you get a big game seven pop, but that series. Mm-hmm. Would be tough. I'm rooting for it.
I think they'll take the early win. Like it was really strong. And, you know, you talk about some of these numbers they were able to draw. I mean, that's without the benefit, these numbers, that close to a million viewers, that's without the benefit of the RSN numbers in a place like Boston where it probably did gangbusters.
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah.
No Chicago this year, no Philly. I mean, you know, there's some very traditional big time hockey markets in the U.S. that are not part of these playoffs, although you did get the Rangers. Which is a nice pop, and I'm very into hockey, obviously, because I'm living in a city now where they're into it. But I'm really
intrigued.
I'm really interested to see the hockey viewership numbers as we head forward from here. Also, the Canadian media deal is coming up soon too. Go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
This is random, kind of, but do you remember what the viewership was in Canada for the gold medal game in 2010? Any idea?
Yeah.
You said the 38 million people you mentioned just made that jump out, because I feel like it had to be about 37 million.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like that kind of insane, but I'll see if I can find it. I believe if I'm right about this... You know, that game, by the way, did crazy numbers on NBC, if you remember. Yeah.
That game did.
Didn't that game do like 20 something
million viewers?
What's that?
Holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. It drew. Yeah, okay. The game.
On scale, that's way better than the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the game on. It was on 9 national networks in Canada in 8 different languages, 16.6 million, which was half the population at the time.
That's awesome. Yeah.
By the way, that's a great number from the U.S. Holy cow!
Yeah,
you know that's an NFL divisional playoff game.
It is.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. That's what the NHL needs. They need U.S. versus Canada in the Stanley Cup Finals.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
All right, we'll finish up on a couple of different things. Oh yeah, one more viewership thing before we get to some unfortunately ugly news. Austin, as our shouldn't keep saying as our viewership guy, because you're not that, because you're front and center carp. So
I am front and center carp.
Right, 3 months, 3 months after the Super Bowl, Fox and Nielsen decide, oh, we got a Super Bowl record here. What'd you think of the fact that the Nielsen acknowledges that they made an error, and now Fox has the most viewed Super Bowl of all time?
Well, they called the Georgia Secretary of State that said, find me 2 million viewers. No. It was an internal coding error where an NFL Network feed was given viewers that should have been assigned to Fox. And yeah, it sucks that you found it 4 months after the Super Bowl, but let's get the number right, I think was what the NFL and what Nielsen and what Fox wanted to do. So they all came out like, here's the new number. It's a record number. I mean, yeah, 4 months after the Super Bowl, 3 months after the Super Bowl, whatever it is a lot to wait. But that was the reason why you saw it. I mean, this was on the right side of the ESPN.com homepage, like, oh, new record for a Super Bowl. So I think they did a good job of getting the message out. But you obviously want to tell that the week after the Super Bowl, not the first week in May.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you. And, you know, to be totally candid, myself and my colleague at The Athletic, Bill Shea, got a call from Fox Sports, or maybe a text officially from Fox Sports PR ahead of time, asking if we wanted to write about this and making their executives available, which we did do. I know SBJ got that same call, Austin, because you guys always get that. And if you're Fox, Chad, you know, this isn't about making more money, because the Super Bowl ad fees are what they are. It's not based on the viewership the year before. You're charging what you charge for 30-second commercials because it's the Super Bowl. But you've dealt with these guys for a long time. This is a very big source of pride for all these different networks, and it's a very good marketing thing to be able to put out there that your network was the one that had the largest Super Bowl audience of all time.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, I think you can kind of justify and say, well, it was a great game between, you know, Chiefs, Eagles, a lot of betting interest on that game, going both ways. The natural, I think, instinct when something is announced a couple of months after the fact is to be cynical about it, but you know, you can really look at it and understand, you know, how it did end up in this spot, and take the error for what it's worth and what it was.
Yeah, no, and this one, I believe it. I mean, who on earth would like to sign 3.5 months later? Let's call these media people to say we got a Super Bowl, right? You know what I mean? It's sort of like, if you're going to go through that process, if you're going to have Nielsen actually acknowledge in the statement, you know, you're getting into David Duchovny, Jillian Anderson, X-File stuff, if you think this is like a, you know, some kind of secret plot.
No, it always sucks when it happens like this. It sucked when Carl Lewis got a gold medal days after Ben Johnson was stripped of it.
Yeah.
It's that sort of feeling. It's not the same. Like, yeah, you won, but it just sucks that it has to happen after the fact.
Right. Now, you know, we'll give our buddy Robert Seidman a shout out here. All of this stuff is propped up now because of out-of-home viewing. Correct, Austin? So the reality is, in many ways, it's never going to be an apples-to-apples comparison anymore because we don't know what, like, Super Bowl 15 may have done in out-of-home viewing or Super Bowl 26 or whatever. So, you know, all the sports numbers are going to be amplified now with out-of-home viewing. And by the way, I personally think that's great because I think sports has been undercounted for 50 years. But the reality is, like, you can never really know what the most Super Bowl watch of all time is because they only have brought this new metric in for the last 3 years.
Well, the technology just wasn't there. And I've had to make my own peace with it. Like, it is unfortunate that we won't truly have that answer, but the technology just wasn't there. Okay. So it is what it is. And anything compared to a sporting event before the pandemic, you're seeing depending on the sport, it's more for football, college and pro, you're seeing a significant spike there by including the out-of-home. Find me a sports bar on a Saturday or Sunday that isn't packed with people watching football games. Of course, the number is going to see a 10, even 15 or 20% bump sometimes. The Super Bowl, I mean, can you think of a bigger gathering for a football event? No.
No, but sporting
event.
Yeah, but like my thought would be like, and again, you never can get this answer, but just think of like the big events in the 70s and the 80s and how many people watch stuff in bars that you'll, like, put it this way, I'll give you the perfect example. We will never absolutely get any kind of accurate count as to how many people watched the Miracle on Ice game. It was taped.
Oh.
So I'm talking about 8 o'clock. There's no record of people going out to restaurants or going to their families' houses and like having parties or going to the airport. You know what I mean? Like, I guarantee you that game, whatever the number is considered, the amount of people who watch that game, I would say add 10 million more people. And that's probably the more accurate number.
Well, that's one of the great things about sports. We can always play what if. I can play what if the Orioles didn't give a terrible 7-year deal to Chris Davis. I can speculate all day.
You're not happy? You should be overjoyed. Grayson Rodriguez, Ryan Mountcastle, Gunnar Henderson. You got a good young team there.
I'm very happy now.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's been a long drought. I love the American League East. Being in an AL East city, all three of us are, in fact. They're going to get four playoff teams. In that division this year,
the Yankees won't be one of them.
You know, Chad, I don't want to be a New York tabloid and start ripping on Brian Cashman in May. Let's see. I think the Red Sox are not going to be that team, Chad. I hope to be wrong, but trust me, they've been rolling. They just rolled my Blue Jays, so you know maybe I'll be wrong. But I'm not in love with the Red Sox pitching long term at the moment. You?
No, they are. You know, they're a little over 500 and they're getting interests that didn't look like they were going to have at the start of the season. Shaughnessy wrote them off after the first game. but they're kind of set to be what their best case scenario was, which was right on the fringe of the playoff race and playing interesting games in September that, you know, keep people going to the ballpark watching Nesson.
Yeah, if Jaron Duran continues to be Willie Mays, I mean, they will be in the race.
Guy changes his swing every year, so we'll see if this one sticks.
It's interesting.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, let's finish up on we'll finish on the Derby, but I want to get to one thing before that. Man, this has been a terrible month for media layoffs. ESPN, BuzzFeed News, 538, ABC News, National Geographic in 2023, and NPR, Sports Illustrated. Let me start with you, Chad, on this. Do you think in a 2023 environment that a news site can be developed or formed? Let's say it has a sports component and succeed. I guess what I'm trying to ask you is that, are the days of trying to pull off like one of these national websites, you think you could still do that? I mean, I guess you could still do that if you take venture capitalist money, but I'm just trying to, I'd like to get your insight into you think we're in a post sort of media world where that can't happen anymore, and the new places are more independent, sort of the Substack kind of economy. How do you see it? Because this happened to be a particularly awful month for this.
Well, it's all about appeasing the shareholders, right? So it depends whether they're going to be comfortable with normal growth, or it has to just keep growing and growing and growing and growing, or you start making cuts because you're not making enough, enough money, and your stock prices off of that, which seems to be the case in ESPN's instance and other places, which is frustrating. But yes, I do think places can succeed. They just need to have realistic people in charge of them, and people who aren't there to, I mean, as you see with the news, a lot of newspapers are just there to gut the place and sell off the parts and take whatever resources they have and cut those down until it's a skeleton crew making just a little bit of, allowing the ownership to make money, but not a quality product. So I do think it can succeed, but it's almost entirely dependent on who's in charge of it and what their motivations are.
Yeah, I mean, I see the sort of venture capitalist backed places are always seem to end the same way. The Messenger is what I was thinking about, because they're about the startup with a lot of journalists. So, yeah, I was a root for them to succeed long term. I'm not sure I would bet on it in this environment, but I certainly hope. I will say this one thing about ESPN, Austin, and I covered Mike Soltis, who all three of us have worked with a couple weeks ago. Absolutely just brutal, disgraceful layoff because of that guy's institutional knowledge as well as just his professionalism. But the one thing about ESPN, and these cuts are from Disney, they're being pointed down to ESPN. It all layoffs suck. It particularly sucks when you do them over waves. And I would hate to be an ESPN worker who now has to wait until whatever it's going to be, like July or June for the second round. That sucks. And again, maybe there's accounting reasons for that they're doing it in waves, but none of it's good, but I think in some ways it's probably better for everybody to know, as opposed to have this, this thing hanging over your head for now, another month or two.
No, nobody wants that sort of Damocles just kind of wavering over them, just waiting for whatever is or may not be coming. It's just a really crappy way to live. And, speaking specifically about Mike Soltis, I can't speak highly enough about Mike and what he's meant to me and my career and the work that I've been able to do with him. And I consider him a friend. And just to see the way that happened really sucks, because you will not find many people more professional and really just good at their job than Mike has been in the entire time that I've been doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I said this 2 weeks ago, and again, it's Mike Soltis is going to be on different sides of the aisle of all of us, and was. And there were certainly a lot of things he didn't like that I wrote over the years, and trust me, I'd hear from him, whether it be a text or email. But that guy was always professional when it came to dealing with journalists. And that, Chad, I know you worked with him, work with him is a weird word. You dealt with him as well. That to me, always sort of separated people in the public relations business. It's if you just sort of understood that there are times where someone's going to write something that you don't like. And if you sort of if the relationship is professional and respectful, like you get through those times, because so much of what is written is publicity for your network, right? Like I don't hear from ESPN when I write a piece like about one of their people who I really, really like, you know, and publish it. It's usually you hear like when you write something that's negative. So it does work all ways, but yeah, I always respected Saltis because he never lied to me, as far as I know, at least. Mm-hmm. And he understood both sides of the
He was very good about it.
Maybe he did.
He covered it so well.
And he just understood both sides of the business. And sometimes that's rare. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And he was the same way with me. And I think there are probably more than we acknowledge on here sometimes. there are a lot of people on the PR side of this business that are the same way.
Yes,
that,
agreed.
They say if they have an issue with something you write, they say their piece and then no grudge is held. If it's a case where you're just doing your job rather than, you know, crossing a line or something like that. And I'd put Bill Hoffheimer in that and Ben Cafardo, Josh Krulowitz, all kinds of people over there at ESPN.
Chad Finn talking, by the way, not Richard Deitch, by the way.
Yeah, well, I think Mike set the bar for that in a lot of ways with people. And it frustrated me when this happened and you wrote about him. All of our outlets wrote about him being one of the people that lost a job and being there 43 years. And a lot of the response I got was, well, tell me when there's some on-air people. And
you're not surprised. Yeah, by the way, bring back Carrie Potts, my favorite, who was always exactly like Saltis in that. Like, you may not have loved everything she said, but she was a straight shooter and much respect to her. Has moved on to, I believe, a better world. But that, you know, it's interesting, Chad, because like that initial round at ESPN, The Athletic didn't want to do a story on it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And it was interesting. Like, I think the reasoning was that, and either right or wrong, you can argue it, but like that, you know, should it be tied to either someone who is well known or should it be tied to like the larger sort of business story when all of the cuts are done? And I can understand that argument on that, but the reality is that like, I think if it's like Joe Buck, people are going to read and like react. If it's like a producer who put in 25 years, who quite frankly is probably more important than Joe Buck, no disrespect to Joe. It's just the interest isn't the same, right? Which sucks, but that's the reality of it. All right. I didn't think we would go as long on that, but I guess we did. Last one. Austin, you know, one of the great viewership things about the Kentucky Derby for me, I believe this is the case, is that it's the only event on television that's a sporting event like 15 plus million viewers where more women watch than men. Am I correct about that? Isn't that always the case? Like,
I think so. It has that sort of stat. I mean, that's why you see, you know, a lot of female focused elements to it, whether it's, you know, on the hats or whatever. There's a lot of advertising.
I mean, is that really female? I mean, I don't know. I feel like they're, I don't want to be genderizing here. Aren't they just trying to just do the celebrityization of it?
There's a lot of that too, but it, you know, it's not gymnastics, but for an event that is not a women's event like that, like a women's gymnastics event or in the Olympics or something. Yeah. Like I think it has a heavily female audience.
Chad, are you interested in what, do you watch the Derby every year just as a consumer, as a casual consumer fan?
I do, but it's funny you mentioned the appeal to women because it's usually either my wife or my daughter that mentions that it's on before I remember.
Yeah, I should know this off the top. I probably should have done research. Apologies to NBC Sports PR. I believe it's like 51% 49 where it's the whatever they do there, they're both the race portion and the 7 hours of pregame. I think the index is a little bit more of a pop on women than men, wherein like the other sports that draw those kind of numbers, you know, like in the tens of millions of viewership, it's usually men have the higher percentage.
Ignore the race. They also do some programming, like I think still on like a Bravo. So, you know, around the Derby.
Do you know if the Olympics, Austin, do you know if the Olympics are that as well? If it's more women, I guarantee for some events.
I'm not sure.
Some events, though, I bet you for some events it is, right? I would guess.
For like figure skating, yeah.
Like I would think that gymnastics draws more women on a percentage basis for than men. It's just a guess.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, but I don't know. We'll do the math on this and figure that out. But yeah, I'm into it. I love horse racing. I work with the guy I consider the best horse racing writer of his generation in Tim Layden. When I was very young reporter at SI, got to work with Bill Knack, who I think is the greatest horse racing writer ever. He wrote some incredible stuff about Secretariat. And the Globe, Chad, has a long history and great tradition of writing about some of these big races. I don't know if you guys still send somebody now, but for many, many years, you guys always staffed that one.
Well, our sports editor for a long time, Joe Sullivan, who I guess he retired about 5 years ago, but he was a huge horse racing guy, and so it always remained in prominence with us. I think sometimes we send a columnist, and I don't know if that's the plan this year, but it still gets big play in the paper.
What about you, Austin? Does anybody have the boondoggle from SBJ on this one?
I don't think we have anybody that will be a Churchill.
Oran can't convince Abe. Hey, let me do a Marchand Oran from the track or no?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if John's going to be there.
That's a good. I feel like that would be a great gig for a sports business publication because think how much money is floating around there.
Well, next year might be different. You have the 150th running, and they're rolling out a lot of new facility upgrades, a lot of special things. So we'll see.
What about putting in for the Austin Carp trip for that one?
Oh, you can't see me winking here?
Yeah. All right, Abe, if you're listening, and I would say that's under 30% that you are, send Austin to Louisville next year. That sounds good. All right.
Love the plug.
You're welcome. Boston Globe sports media writer Chad Finn. Check out all his work at the Boston Globe. Follow him on Twitter. He is edited. What is the name of the book that you edited, Chad? That the Red Sox book? Let's give a plug for that.
The Boston Globe Story of the Red Sox, compilation of all our coverage for the year. So we may be working on a Celtics one as well.
All right. So if you like Yaz and Lynn and Rice and Bernie Carlo.
Butch Hobson.
Butch
Nomar,
Hobson and everybody.
Troy Dixon.
All those Red Sox. Check that book out. Austin Carp is the Sports Business Journal Assistant Managing Editor /Digital. Follow his work on that site. And again, as I always say many, many times on Twitter, he is like, to me, one of the Mount Rushmore people. If you're interested in sports media viewership, like people who really marinate in this data every day, he's on that list, the short list of people in the country who do that. All right, Chad and Austin, thank you as always for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast, and we will have you back on soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, guys.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Austin and Chad for popping on for another engaging conversation. If you like this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and a note about what you like. That helps us stay in business, as the expression goes. A couple of podcasts this week, or earlier, NFL draft expert Daniel Jeremiah, probably the best working television draft analyst today, went into deep into his process to prepare for the event, what it's like after the draft, would he consider ever returning back to work for the NFL? He was a scout for a while. And so I think you'll enjoy that conversation. On Monday, Tim Layden and Dana O'Neill on the challenges and joys of covering the Kentucky Derby. So if you've ever been interested in what it's like to cover the Derby, those are two of the best. Podcast on the NFL draft and ESPN layoffs with CBS Sports NFL analyst Amy Trask and Washington Post staff writer Ben Strauss. We did some NHL stuff with ESPN's Ryan Clark. Analyst Michael Nathanson was on this podcast in April on the future of sports meteorites. Alan Shipnuck, Howard Beck, Ryan Rucco, and many others on this podcast that if you go to the archives, I think you'll enjoy. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League Podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.